Commissioner President Milovsky?
Yes.
And the motion carries.
Right. Will there be any resolutions?
Yes, Commissioners, Melissa Jones from the Office of Historic Resources for the record. Item number six on today's agenda is the proposed historical monument nomination for the Bildoraine residence located at 124 East Avenue 33. The staff recommendation is for the commission to take the property under consideration as a potential historical culture monument, and the preparer, Charlene Fisher, is here to present the nomination.
I'm not sure at this point, but it won't be too long. I'm going to refer over. Initially, I'm going to refer to the owner, Paul Greenstein, who actually did the PowerPoint you guys have looked at. So.
We'll give you that in detail.
Okay, yeah, that one. And the.
So we're going to start with the PDM, who's going to do a little presentation. You give your name, please.
Of course. I am Delia DeLizer, and this is Paul Greenstein, owners of the property. We're going to present what's not in the part that Charlie will attend. And we're here to talk about the Bildoraine residence, which we're restoring on Avenue 33 in Lincoln Heights.
The Bentley Clipper.
We live around the corner from this house in another historic home we restored, and which is an HCM. And doing historical research always reveals surprises. I'm going to share just one. In 1912, when the subject property was built, our house was lived in by the Gribleys, Arthur and Mabel. The subject property was built by the Bildoraines. They were also Arthur and Mabel. Do you think they knew each other? They could see each other's houses. We may never know. The Bildoraines built their house in Mission Revival style, which is more common for large public buildings than it is for small single-family homes. This is a style that casts the Spanish and Mexican colonial periods in a positive and romantic light. They formed their house in the shape of a California adobe in a U around a central courtyard, here scaled down from the smaller size of this residence, with the courtyard rendered instead as a central atrium covered in glass. Both Arturo and Mabel were Californios, with notable ancestors all the way back to the Spanish colonial period on both sides. Arturo's father, Jesus Bildoraine, was the Los Angeles City patrolman who was shot in the shoulder in the incident that triggered the notorious 1871 Chinese massacre. On Arturo's mother's side, they were the Lopez family. The Lopez adobe still stands in San Fernando, and it was one of the Lopezes who first discovered gold in California at the Oak of the Golden Dream in Santa Clarita. On Mabel's side, her mother was Eulalia Lucy Escandon. Her grandfather was Angel Escandon, a state senator, mayor of Ventura, and a founder of Ventura County when it separated from Santa Barbara County. This is Arturo. In 1900, Hoseman Bildoraine served in the Los Angeles Fire Department on Engine 4 at Station 4 near the plaza and just a stone's throw from where his father had been shot. A policeman and a fireman, these were working class Californios, not the landed gentry of the vast ranchos, but working class Californios putting themselves forward as Californios in the 20th century. The early 20th century was a time when the lives and lifeways of the Californios had been romanticized by the tremendously popular novel Ramona. Legions of Anglo-American tourists had flocked to California adobes like that of the Del Valles and Rancho Camulos on the top left, looking for what better became known as the home of Ramona. And many scholars, including myself, have written about this. But it was also the Californians themselves who romanticized their own past, as with the Del Valles, who sold their produce under the home of Ramona brand, and Reginaldo Del Valle, who served at the Ramona parlor of the Native Sons of the Bold West, who used, as Steve Bottom Wright, The home of Ramona as their symbol. Central to the California tradition of hospitality with its lavish multi-day fiestas were California women and their cooking. Carrying that tradition forward into the 20th century, California women now shared their hospitality not only with friends, but also with tourists by turning their homes into restaurants. In Glendale, at the end of the Pacific Electric Line, Piedad Yorba de Sal of the well-known Yorba family built a house in 1907 in Mission Revival style around the central atrium and opened it as a restaurant named Casa Verdugo, where she featured her Spanish cuisine, shown here bottom left, making tamales in her central atrium. Yorba served her guests in the very rooms of her home, turning each room into a dining room and offering guests an intimate and authentic experience of California cuisine and California lifeways. The Bildereins built their house in much the same way, between two trolley lines, in Mission Revival style, around the central atrium, and even with similar chains on the patio. And Mabel Bildereins, like Piedad Yorba de Sal, was famous for her cooking and ran a restaurant serving her California cuisine at her home. The Bildereins residence stands today as a fine example, not only of Mission Revival architecture in a residential setting, but of the lives of working class Californians putting forward generations of California culture in the American period.
Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about the house and just give you some history of the times. There is no listed architect for a house like this. This is a little more organic. The owners probably specified what they wanted from a contractor, and this is what they designed. The house itself, if you think about it, is kind of a Roman villa, which translates to a Spanish hacienda, which in this case translates to a modern craftsman house. So I'm going to show you some pictures of the insides. A lot of these pictures are going to be befores and afters, and I'll turn it over to Turpin. This was the living room when we bought the house. See, everything's white. White was the predominant feature of this house. This is it now. So we've done a lot of work towards restoring the house back to its original configuration and feel. Here's the kitchen, white tile, white, white, white. We made a joke that anytime anything went wrong with the house, they painted it white. So if they needed a light bulb changed, let's paint it white. Here's the kitchen now. Using a lot of the original features we found when we uncovered. So as an example, that stove pipe connected to the stove is actually the original stove pipe from the house. So we put a wood burning stove updated into its original position. This is the atrium when we got in the house, fluorescent lights, everything white. Doors being white, glass being white on both sides, windows boarded up. Here it is now. We removed the later addition roof on top of the atrium. Does anyone like motorcycles?
Paul does.
Paul does. Okay, there we go. That's the answer.
And his tachos.
So, stripping the wood, putting the fans where they're originally fans, putting period fixtures where the original fixtures were. This is the fireplace. It's at the end of the atrium. It was when we bought the house, it was boarded up. No one didn't even know it was there. In fact, a friend of mine, first day I took possession of the house, he came in and said, "Are you going to open up where the fireplace is?" And I went, fireplace. So that was what was under it. Also painted white. Here's the bathroom after restoration. It had a shower, it had modern fixtures. This is the dining room. Now, I might add that this is like everything else, including us, a work in progress. I have not wallpapered yet in this room, but will. Here's the music room. A little interesting tidbit about this was somebody gave me a piano. I thought it would be nice to have a piano. Where do you put it? The only room for it was under that light fixture, but when you open the piano to tune it, the light fixture was in the way. So I thought, well, that's kind of stupid. And then I realized that they had put a swivel on the light fixture, so there was probably originally a piano in this music room for entertainment. And here we are back in the house. I'm going to turn it over to Charlie.
Okay. Well, been a lot covered already, so I'm going to go some of the background history a little bit later. The Baldarains owned this house up until the 1940s, and they actually, this is kind of a fun story, they made the news in the 1930s. They had a rooster that loved to crow, and the neighbors complained and everything, and they finally were able to, well, actually, Banty was his name, he banished that one. We think one of the neighbors had a chicken dinner, probably, but we don't know that for sure.
If I can interrupt, I might add that Arturo's father, Jesus, also got in trouble with the city council in the 1870s for staging cockfights in the street. Ooh. So it was a family tradition.
Yeah. Anyway, after Arturo passed away, she moved into the rear house. After his wife's death, after Mabel's death, Arturo moved into a rear building on the property and rented the house out. And it was later owned by Hoi K. Wong, a longtime civic leader in the Chinese community, a noted pioneer and asparagus grower, being one of the founders of the Chinese Asparagus Society. He was on board of the Lum Hung Tin Yi Fraternal Association, and he passed away in 1960 at the age of 86. The home was to remain in the Wong family for a little bit, and then they sold it to another Chinese, old-time Chinese family, Wen Bom Wing, Man Yu Wai, excuse me for butchering the names today, I don't know why, Chao Ti Ching, Wen Chang Leon, Jun Bi Chu Neil, and Yan from Phung Tang, and his wife Wei Lan. They owned the house, and they used it as the Universal Ethical Society for number of years. And that's where they met and where they maintained there. Eventually, they sold the property, and I believe it was they sold the property.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So there haven't been a lot of owners on this place over the years, at least as far as transfers. So I won't get into anything more for the meeting, but 10 minutes.
Does anyone have any questions?
How big is that atrium?
The atrium is probably about 800 feet square. It's fairly large. It takes up the full center of the house. And like a classic Spanish hacienda, most of the rooms are entered through the atrium.
The atrium is really an expanded hallway.
Might look at it that way. It also helps keep the house cool because the fans draft the air from the windows up through the center atrium where there are venturi vents. And I reconditioned all that because that had all been kind of wrecked.
And painted white.
The house looks from the photograph, it looks like a relatively modest house, but the pictures that you show make it seem quite large.
It's the world's largest one-bedroom house. Because it is truly a one-bedroom house.
Oh, okay.
But remember, as an example, in the kitchen, we had two drawers for silverware. We have two drawers for, you know, we have so many storage drawers because they were both running a house and a restaurant.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So just a point of clarification is the nomination was just for Fan under Picture 3, correct? Or Fan under Picture 1 as well?
I think that.
The Baldarains are important enough. I believe we did look at notable people. And also, it's certainly a indication of the broad changes that were occurring at the time the house was built. But yes, we were emphasizing the architecture. No question about it.
I heard a lot of social history here in terms of, you know, the extension of this, the Catalonian identity, which was typically 19th century, into kind of how this working class family was maintaining that sense of their identity. I was also curious about whether or not there was enough documentation to make the case for secondary significance with Chinese American history in the 1980s with the other Universal Ethical Society. Maybe that's a point of clarification of what are the criteria you're
in terms of the Chinese heritage of the neighborhood, in the 1950s was when the earliest Chinese residents were moving to Lincoln Heights. Of course, we know that it was unfortunately made difficult for Chinese people, that made impossible for them to buy property for a long time, right? So there still are some elderly Chinese people who moved into the neighborhood, to our community at that time. So this is really, it was one of the pioneers of the Chinese community in Lincoln Heights.
Yeah, traditionally, Lincoln Heights was a mostly Hispanic and Italian neighborhood, actually.
Commissioner Dominguez, Melissa Jones, for the record, just wanted to jump in and let you know. So on the application form, only criterion 3 was checked.
Somehow we were told that we couldn't talk about people we've got us many email. At some point.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Mark's going to, for the record, we don't have any hands raised at this time.
Close button. Thank you for a very interesting informative. I think it's fascinating. One of the things I really enjoy about the vision, what we're able to do, is one drives down the street and it's a nice house. But there's all this history behind it, and this is a way of documenting and recording. So I appreciate that.
If I may interrupt, that's how we felt about the house. We live right around the corner. We thought, that's a nice house, and it's for sale. So we thought, let's just look inside. And when we did, we were just gobsmacked at how great it was.
And I hope that all the information brought in the presentation is incorporated into the application. So it's all part of the
program. Well, when we turned in the application, it was before a lot of that restoration work was done.
I'm talking about the information, the history of the house.
Oh, yeah. Some of the research is much newer research that we weren't aware of at the time when we first submitted it.
Yeah, I'd like to get that included
too. The cost of Verdugo connection was 1.8.
I'd be very happy to do that.
I think that becomes a record. Then he can support that environment.
Thank you.
President Lama, just to clarify, he wanted them to include that as possibly meeting criteria for additional findings, or just by way of adding a thought.
I defer to Commissioner Dominguez on additional findings, but I think it should be part of the bottom line.
Yes, Commissioner Dominguez, what I heard today is suggested that 9-15 under criterion 1, and I'll refer to staff to look at how to keep that, or if it just should be added to the record, but I agree completely that you hear the name builder and I immediately think Chinese massacre, so the fact that there's that connection is really important. That 20th century history of the morning, I mean, everything about that should be included into the knowledge, and I would encourage you as well to look at the 1980s and Chinese American. I know that the Chinese heritage of Asian begins later, but I would love to know that as a significant organization, especially when you think. So just further exploration and again, conversation with that.
I think it's also sort of ironic relationship of Harold Greenwood, both cousins.
And
the relationship of Bill Graham and the Chinese massacre and the ownership of Chinese. But I think that this is very interesting, sort of, regardless.
You know, there's another family in the
street
with the last name of Lawrence, which is also the only reason I was saying on that, but they were now looking for you. That's
awesome. Very much.
Commissioner Dominguez, for the record, I move that we take the building residence at 124 East Avenue 33 under consideration with the notes that we'll further investigate arguments under criterion 1. Commissioner
Bona,
I
said.
Right.
Commissioner Dominguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Bona? Yes. Commissioner
Darren? Yes.
Commissioner President
Manosky? Yes. And the motion carries. Brings us to the end of today's meeting. Next regular meeting of the Cultural Heritage Commission will be held Thursday, March 5th at 10 a.m. City Hall at 10 a.m. We are for sure.
Oh, that's there.
5.
The time is 11:09.
Okay.